Hello and welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Film, the ones and twos. The coffee is flowing here this morning, the morning after election 2021. And for it being a very low turnout election, it seemed like there was a lot of action. The Democrats surprised everyone, and anyone who said they predicted this, they're lying. That 8 of 9 endorsed Democrats were elected to city council. Dominance of the endorsed Democrats across the county in school board races and other, small council, suburban council races as well. And by the way, I'm getting going here. And Sherry, how are you?
There's not enough coffee in all of Cincinnati to help me right now.
And our special guest today is former Ohio Democratic Party chairman, Cincinnatian, David Pepper, to break it all down with us as well.
Was first elected to office 20 years ago, and he has had quite a career in 20 years. So we'll break down city politics with him and talk about, everything he's done. So he's a good guest for today, we thought.
No doubt. And we're going to jump over here in a few minutes and talk with David and break it down even more. But Sherry, just as we sit here grinding through, yawns and being tired, as this is a typical day after feeling from an election, groggy. What are your just quickie takeaways or takeaway? Just what's on top of your mind as we're 12 hours out from a little over 12 hours.
That this slate, okay, this is the Democratic slate, all but Philip O'Neill. And this wasn't even some sort of indictment on him. He's really a newcomer to party politics. Look for him. He's the one endorsed Democrat who, he didn't really scrape in. Liz Keating kept him out. And so look for him to, I think, stay around. He was the newest one, and he fell out in favor of Liz Keating with money, name, in her 8 months on council, proven, she gets along with people, and she was the one Republican the voters put in. But this slate that is sitting down, there's two people responsible for it. So this is the name you haven't heard, Ann Sessler. She organized the party endorsing this year, and she there's only one, organization was the key there. She put a lot of hard deadlines in. She and some others, too. She's not solely responsible, but she really was kind of this powerhouse behind the scenes. Like, we're going to have a slate. We're going to work together, and we're going to tell voters who we are. And then she did all of those things. And Greg Lansman really helped her. You remember P.G. Sittenfeld? You might remember P.G. Sittenfeld was this favorite to be the mayor, and he really was kind of handpicking a slate that he thought that he wanted to have in and picking people on the executive committee who make these endorsements. I mean, this was so granular from years ago of really trying to jockey for positions.
And power.
But That there was some pivoting there after PG was suspended from council, not running for mayor in the wake of those corruption allegations against him. Greg Lansman really stepped up and was like, who do I want to see on council? Who are the people who are working with the party? Who are the people that can get together? And it was foregone conclusion he was going to win. Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney, you never really said, okay, she's going to be in politics. Proved herself to be a true leader right out of the gate. Those budget hearings last year that went awry, Jan Michelle, just the voice. Jan Michelle said, I'll never forget her saying it, I hear you. I want to hear you. We want to hear you. And kept the group as calm as possible, at least inside that room. And she proved herself to be a leader. She was the number one vote getter, followed by Greg Lansman. And he really just was behind the scenes and like, what do I want council to look like? So those two people, Ann Sessler and Greg Lansman, they really kind of put together this more public thing that we've been writing about and you're seeing.
Let's get to the reality here of 20 4% turnout, the worst since 1975, the year I was born. The Reds won the World Series that year, but it's just crazy to think back. 1975 was the last time turnout was this low in a Cincinnati municipal election. That's pretty pathetic.
It's crap. It takes 2 seconds to go vote. If you couldn't go vote on election day because you were working or you had some other reason, get an absentee ballot. You don't want to do it by mail. You don't trust the mail. Go to the Board of Elections. Vote early. There was no lines. You were in and out of there, smack dab in the center of the county. They spent a lot of money on that Board of Elections, moving it there, putting it there. There's really no excuse. And I don't buy the idea that no one cares, because people might not care about that election in that second yesterday, but you know what they care about? Litter, crime, juvenile shootings. Okay, they care about these things. How are you going to spend my money next year? Are you going to raise my earnings tax? And you cannot tell me people do not care about this. The time to care was yesterday.
That's right.
You walk in the voting booth and you pick the people you think, nine people. You don't have to pick the slate. You don't have to pick nine people. You could pick one person you think are going to represent what you want to see on this city council. And yet, it's the worst turnout ever at this time in the city's history. I am stunned.
I'm appalled. And when you see that, and I wrote this in my column today, my winners and losers column. Hope you all like one party rule, because you know, that's what you're going to get here with eight of nine. And let's be honest, a very moderate Republican is in the ninth seat. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk about singing Kumbaya and everybody's going to, you know, get along and everything. But and that's great after all the chaos and incivility at City Hall the last several years. But if things go wrong and problems happen, if you didn't vote, tough. I mean, you didn't let your voice be heard on this. And so this is what you get. Sherry has gone silent. I think we've covered it.
Yeah, that's where we are at on turnout. So I'm already looking forward, right? So what does this council mean? I do feel like the voters, they spoke. The ones who went out, they said they want this slate. And I do feel like we're gonna turn a page here. But where we're at right now is, this is a bench building time. This is a new generation of leaders in Cincinnati that we're going to be looking at. And Aftab Pirival was anointed the mayor in just this absolute runaway election. And because the slate was weak, Aftab Pirival was probably always going to win this race. Yeah. We saw this in the primary, but this. Where was the bench? You know, two newcomers, Cecil Thomas, where voters hadn't been like, you know, screaming for him to be the mayor before all of this. Wendell Young, who has his own problems. Like, who was really running for mayor? David Mann, 81 years old. This was saying we do want a new generation.
Yeah.
This is our bench building time. There a lot of term limited people were out, and we're really going to watch to see what happens. But people are in different stages of their career. So when I look forward to what's going to happen, 2-year council terms and a 4-year mayoral term, first of all, a lot of promises were made. So, and they are taking those seriously. I already hear them talking about the things they want to do. Those all cost money. But anyway, yes. they are taking this serious. But I do think that we're going to start seeing people like, who is going to be the people that lead this bench? This is not a group of people, I don't think, who are going to say Aftab Pirival is going to be the mayor for 8 years. Greg Landsman is term limited out in 4 years. You think he doesn't want to run for mayor? He just picked the entire new generation of leaders. Okay, great. Reggie Harris, he has come out of nowhere. He has made connections all over this city. He was everywhere during this election. He proved himself to be a powerhouse. He came in third. He's brand new to the city politics. That says something. Jan Michelle Lemon Kermit, she did not feel like she was ready to run for mayor, despite her being this leader, despite everyone knowing her, despite being the number one vote getter. And I don't want to age her, because I never want someone to age me. But if Jan Michelle Lemon Kermit thinks she's going to be the mayor, I doubt she's going to say, she's in her 60s, that she's going to be like, I'll wait 8 years and I'll do it when David Mann decided to do it. I don't think so. So I do think that this is a council that wants to get ready to get to work. They want to do some of these things. Expect them bikes, right? We're going to see a pivot here. Bikes, making that streetcar run, some green energy and technology and being, you know, some of these more democratic ideals where John Cranley was really, he pivoted towards all of the development deals.
More pragmatic, yeah.
So we'll see, you know, difference there and the getting along. But this is, we're going to watch a new generation of leaders emerge, and it's not going to be everyone like, okay, 8 years, we got all this. That's not what it's going to be.
You're going to see a lot of differences. And, you know, Aftab Pirovall is an ideologue. He's already, you know, he's talking about affordable housing and, you know, environmental things. And it's like, I think you're going to get in there and you're going to see, like, oof, as you mentioned, these things cost money, and the reality is going to set in at some point here, and let's see what happens. But, you know, the basic government services still need to be taken care of. Those are the most important things. Democrat, Republican, independent, whatever, it doesn't matter. That's what's the most important thing for the citizens of Cincinnati, whether 24% of the registered voters voted or 100% of them voted. These folks have a responsibility to go in there and stop fighting and stop focusing on things that aren't priorities of local government and social agendas and ideological things that belong in Washington, and even in some cases don't belong in Washington. Get in there, make sure your streets are safe, make sure the litter, that big piece you had last week, that's the kind of stuff that local government needs to address. And I keep getting on this and I keep harping on it, but it's very important. Last word, Sherry.
Watch for three big decisions. And they might not come in the next 2 months, but they will come quickly out of the gate. Does Aftab Pirovall keep the city manager? Mayors do tend to pick their own. There is a behind-the-scene push. Do we keep Paula Boggs-Muthing or not? Interesting. Who's going to be the vice mayor? Who is he going to choose for that? Reggie Harris really came out of the gate and was like, Aftab Pirovall is my mayoral candidate. I want him to be the mayor. Jan Michelle stayed neutral. Said, we got two good candidates here. Stayed neutral. So we'll see those two. I would say that Greg Landsman is in the mix, but with his experience, there's no other role for him except budget chairperson because he's seen the budget before. That's always a help. I'm just, you know, it's $460 million.
The only elected incumbent to come back.
So, but Jan Michelle had been there before. Liz has some experience.
He's the only elected incumbent.
Agree. So expect him really to be this budget chairman. So who's going to, okay, so city manager, who's going to be the vice mayor?
Previously elected.
And a new police chief.
All right. I think we've, seems like we both have some energy here this morning.
I thought I was really tired, but I guess not.
I guess not.
You know when I get going. You've been there.
Absolutely. We will we'll have plenty more on this election, looking forward to what's next on Cincinnati.com and in the Inquirer. Let's get more analysis coming up here with our special guest, David Pepper. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and it's a pleasure to welcome back to the podcast author, former Ohio Democratic Party chairman, dad, former Hamilton County Commissioner, Cincinnati City Councilman, an all-around great guy, David Pepper. How you doing, David?
All right. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
We're out of time after all of those titles. Actually,
oh, great. Great talking with you, David.
You need to introduce me everywhere.
Honestly, because I do quote you in stories, it is getting a little hard. Like, you're like, because whatever the topic is, right? Former councilman and commissioner, state party chair who wrote a book, and it's like, that's a long clause. But okay, sorry.
David, as we sit here on Wednesday morning recording, we're all, you know, fresh off of last night's election. And the question I have for you, we want to get into sort of your three takeaways on this. We want to talk about your new book,
Hillary's tweet for you, gerrymandering. Want to talk about all those things. But first, looking back at last night, here in Hamilton County, we saw where the Democratic endorsed slates in Cincinnati City Council, in councils across the county, in school board races across the county, was absolutely dominant. Eight endorsed Democrats get 9 of the seats on the Cincinnati City Council. We've never seen the slate that dominant before in this county. What do you attribute that dominance to? Is that a backlash? Well, this is a question I want to ask you in that. Is that a backlash to Trump? What's your thoughts there on that?
I think the most important takeaway, because it's not just 21. I mean, we saw this in 18 and 20 in the judicial races. It's about organizing and campaigning smart, and give Gwen McFarland and people like Ann Sessler and all these candidates credit, because they basically have figured out, and I've seen this happen in other parts of the state, if you run together, if you all jointly put your resources into campaigning and door knocking and leaving that slate card everywhere, in a field of 35 people where people can't figure out who half the names are, it's not just that these are getting a Democratic endorsement. It's that they actually put their work together as a unit, and we're knocking on thousands of doors for months in a very disciplined way. And that has lifted, and they're standing outside the Board of Elections, passing it out for early vote. And if you do it really, really well, it works. And, you know, we all heard about polling a few days ago that it had a lot of other people ahead of some of these Democrats. But a really well-run slate campaign defeats polling, because people know what party they're in. They look at the list. They look at the list of 35, and they go down it. And I just think that you give a lot of credit here to leaders of the Hamilton County Party, the Cincinnati Party, who spent a lot of time figuring out who to endorse and surprise people with some of those choices. But then, more than that, put resources and time and convince candidates who often don't want to do this. It takes some trust to say, I'm going to turn my field operation over to a joint effort. They had a field campaign manager for everybody, just like they did for the judicial races. And the lesson is, it works. And we, as you mentioned, and it worked in places like Wyoming, too, where you had fully contested folks way beyond one party, but the folks that are running as a slate, I mean, it really does work. And so I think people are very surprised by, you know, Jim Tarbell or others not winning, Kevin Flynn. But when you run as a slate and you spend the entire summer passing out that slate card and then the entire early vote window passing it out, it overcomes the fact that some of your opposition may actually be better known.
The silver lining of that is the slate got to know each other. You do, correct, when you're with them, get the sense that they're friends. Some of them were friends before, but when you spend all day, every day with somebody, you have to be friends with them. I mean, that's what happened with Jason and me.
I agree. I mean, I've met with all of these folks, and I've known Scotty Johnson a long time. My guess is people didn't vote for them. They're like, oh my gosh, it's so many Democrats. I will say, I think this is a very good group of people who ran for the right reasons. And sometimes when you get elected, some people, we've seen it, kind of go off and become people they weren't before. And I don't think that'll happen here. But I think there's a huge potential that this is a group. And I include Liz Keating in what I'm saying here. It's clear that she's in this for public service, too. She worked well with other council members. She ran a smart campaign. And there's another lesson we can talk about there. How do Republicans win in Democratic-leaning areas? She shows you that's the path, not the path of being a bomb thrower. But I think there's real potential with a new mayor in this group, you know, with some good people with experience like Greg Landsman, Jan Michelle Kearney, and this new group. I think there's real potential for the reasons you said. They got to know each other. They worked together. And I do think people are ready to see that at City Hall. So there's a lot of potential. Now, you got to start off right. You got to learn the place well. But I think there's a lot of potential here because they did run as a team.
Are the days of, and you alluded to it, you know, Republicans in a Democratic area, and you have experience of the other way around, Democrats in very heavily Republican areas, being, you know, the minority party in a majority, you know what I'm talking about. Are the days, will we see this more now moving forward in city elections or in, you know, not just in the city council, but in elections across Hamilton County? Will we see where the Democratic slate will be this dominant, or do you think it comes back to where there'll be, you know, obviously the Democrats will still, you know, be in the majority, but where it comes back to, you know, a few non-Democrats get elected to these councils?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, the thing I want everyone to hear is it's not just about the card. It was about the hard work that went on for months with a dedicated team, a paid campaign manager for the slate. So, but I think in a city with, you know, where one party is a lot more voters than the others, if it's done that way versus every man and woman for him or herself, which is kind of how it ran in the past, I think the results can be more dominant. I think I even mentioned to both of you building up to this, this will be the first year where I've seen a true slate approach for city council. It will be interesting to see how it works was the way I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
And what I wasn't saying was it could surprise people. It could mean not five or six, which everyone kind of thought would happen. It could mean eight or close to nine, which is what happened. And because, again, a list of 35 candidates for the average voter who's got a lot of other things in the world to worry about, that's a very imposing list. Like, who are all these people? I heard people say that. Even if you're paying attention, that's a lot of names. If you've got something in your hand that says these are the nine people in the party you feel part of, and here's who we've endorsed, and it's been passed out again and again and again, that makes that voter's life easier. So I think if it's organized and well run, then you know, I think it is a wave of the future for an area if you have you know, good you know, a good majority. Now, I will say, you also saw, and by the way, Jason, I know where you live, where I grew up, Wyoming, a Republican also won there as well. And what I was told, I don't know him, but both Liz Keating and this Republican, I was told, were the least partisan of the Republicans. They weren't part of sort of a sense of attacking the other side. And I think that is being rewarded in these places, that people, you know, people often want balance, even if they're from one party, but they don't want people who come in and truly, you know, make it hard to get anything done. And I look at how Liz Keating approached being in the council last 6 months quite differently than let's say Betsy Sunderman. Now, she obviously also has a better known last name going in, but they both have political names. And I see how she did. I see that she had a campaign where Dwight Tillery endorsed her. I think she was really savvy about what do you do to win as a Republican in a pretty Democratic city. And I get along with all these people, but as I watch the Hamilton County Republican Party behave as if all these places are sort of Trump country, I think we're watching a losing strategy. I think they need to figure out how do we get Republicans, at least in these areas, like a Liz Keating, like the gentleman who went to Wyoming, who look like they're there to get work done, who look like public servants, who acted like, you know, when I worked with Pat DeWine on city council, that's what he felt like. And I think those are the types of people that have a chance of winning in these Democratic areas. I think voters will give them a chance if they don't look like they're just going to, you know, turn the place upside down and slow down progress. And you know, that win by her and that was a tough thing to win on when you look back. I mean, Liz Keating winning that with only 6 months on council, that wasn't easy to do. And I think she set a tone that cut through that no one else was able to do. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And I also think, you know, and I think you're exactly right. And I remember when Ernie Davis ran a coordinated campaign in 2018 for the countywide Democrats, I believe it was 2016, and how successful that was. And that was really the first time it was sort of robust in that manner done around here. And how important, David, is the fact that, I mean, genuinely, it seems like these nine folks who were on the Democratic slate in the Cincinnati City Council race, they generally seem to like each other. How important is that? I mean, almost like it sounds like I'm talking about sports, but is that team chemistry really important here?
It is. And, you know, and I would meet with them one on one over the course of the campaign. I first met with Reggie Harris like 3 or 4 years ago at a Starbucks. He wasn't even thinking about running for office. He was just trying to get, you know, into the political world. I found every one of these people to be a genuinely likable, good person in it for the right reason. You know, people already know her, she wouldn't have won. But Victoria Parks, you're meeting every time you talk to her, you're in a good mood. She's a good person. She's got amazing life stories. She stepped up when Todd Portune got sick, took over his seat, you know, helped us all get through his passing away, planning his funeral, served in that job. Now she wins this. What a great story. What a fighter she is. So Scotty Johnson has been around for years doing good things. Like I said, there's a potential for some really good people to work together. And I think to make people look at City Hall and feel good about it, because it's people who are there for the right reasons, and there for public service. And right now, in so many levels of politics, it doesn't feel like public service to a lot of people, including me. I watch a lot of shenanigans. That's one reason I wrote this book that we'll talk about. And right now, my hope is that the potential that we see here is something that actually comes about. Now, I've seen people in the past get elected in a really good way and then go astray. And one of the things I think is incumbent upon people like, you know, Jan Michel and Greg Landsman or Gwen McFarland or myself is, okay, now these folks have won. Let's all, you know, be as helpful as we can so that they ultimately take a very good opportunity and turn it into very good public service.
Good stuff. Any other – I know Sherry's got some questions for you. But looking at this election, any other takeaway from this that you have kind of from last night?
Well, the one is running as a team clearly works very well, especially if you're not just doing it sort of in the paper or something, but actually at doors. Number two, and we're in Cincinnati, but I have sort of a statewide lens. I'm very excited about this next generation of leadership, whether it's AVTAB here or a guy named Justin Bibb, who shocked the world in Cleveland. I mean, literally.
Cleveland mayor race.
He's a new Cleveland mayor. He's mid-30s. He'd never run for anything. He ran against a ton of big names. He kind of ran against the Democratic establishment, and he won overwhelmingly, just like AVTAB. So I think these two cities are moving to a next generation. I think it's exciting. I think it's actually really exciting to see. So I was excited for both of them. And the other big story that I think is really, and if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know I'm excited about this. I do think something really interesting happened last night in all these school board races. There was this very orchestrated, big money effort. It was kind of like the Tea Party, but 10 years later, to have these sort of very, you know, hyped up anti-mask folks take over school boards. And you saw Jane Timken, the running for Senate, passing out money to some of these candidates. You saw the Ohio GOP running slates in Wyoming and attacking candidates in Sycamore, you name it. They got crushed around the state. And I think it's another lesson, which is, average parents like myself who have kids that we just want to keep safe in schools and people who actually believe in their school system. You know, you live in Wyoming, great school system, Sycamore, great school system. I think in the last month, there was such a tension on these outsider school board sort of candidates and the yelling at school board meetings and the threats that I think parents around the state said, we don't want this in our schools. Like, our schools are too important to us. Keep the crazy politics elsewhere, please. And this wasn't an organized effort to defend school boards against this craziness. I just think a lot of parents and voters got worried and did their own homework. And incredibly, in red areas and blue, looks like they turned away almost all the people who look like they might create this sort of anti-science chaos on school boards. And not everyone's going to agree with this. I think it's wonderful. I think it's really – I was really worried that we were going to see school boards turned into, you know, mini state houses where it's nonstop, crazy, over-the-top antics that just pull schools down with the rest of politics. And last night, I think, was a victory for everyday parents saying, no, thank you. You know, Jane Timken is running her first ad saying, parents over politicians. I actually think that's what happened last night, ironically, not what she wanted. I think the parents actually said, we don't want, you know, hyped up extreme politicians in our school boards. And for the most part, they didn't vote for those people, which was a pretty – I'm surprised. I did not expect that. I thought that the money behind those sort of challenging school board candidates was actually going to win the day, and it didn't.
Yeah. Sherry,
So sometime in all of your spare time, you told me a few months ago, it feels like, that you were writing a book. And then, boom, here it is. And it's actually, like, the most amazing timing, it seems like. Laboratories of Autocracy. And it's like a wake-up call from behind the lines. I mean, this is a very personal book for you, and it is not the typical fiction books you've been writing. So what made you do this? Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. So I wrote it because I've in Ohio, you watch the decline of Ohio, and it's, you know, Jason writes about it in our small towns. I see it everywhere. And hand in hand with the decline of so much of what we love about Ohio is the decline in the democracy of Ohio. And this is going to sound dramatic, but it's just, if we take a step back, and by not being chair anymore, it let me take a step back and really look at it. I believe the State House of Ohio, like so many in this country, because of the extreme gerrymandering, has ceased to be really a functioning democratic system. Those office holders, you know, last night, we didn't know what was going to happen. It was a real democracy. We thought we knew, and in some cases what happened, what we thought happened, it would happen, did. Others, it didn't. Gerrymandering, next year, if they get what they want, there's no question what will happen. 99% of the seats will be, you know, wholly predictable the minute we see the map. That has created a system, along with some other problems, like the fact that we basically don't know who our state house members are. That has created a system where the state houses of our country have ceased being, you know, basically functioning democracies. You know, they cannot lose. They know they cannot lose. And we now are into an entire generation of politicians, the end of one generation of politicians, who are in power in a state house like Ohio's and around the country without ever having really experienced democracy. And the book is going through how dangerous that has become, even more dangerous than anyone, I think, could have anticipated 10 years ago. It's leading to the corruption that we all see in Columbus, whether it be the for-profit charter school scam, which is undermining public schools, whether it be HB6. But the system never stops because it's basically untouchable. It's leading to the laws like we see in Texas, which are now being repeated in Ohio. And the point of the book is to say, until we start fighting back against undemocratic state houses attacking democracy, we're going to continue to have this downward spiral, not just in politics, not just in democracy, but also in public outcomes. Now, I talk about this story where, you know, one town that I know quite well is called Manchester, Ohio. It's 40 miles along the river from here. It's, if you walk down the street, it's a ghost town. Almost every single building is empty. The people are leaving. First time in 80 years, its population, I think, is under 2,000. The citizens of Manchester called their state senator to have a meeting, or at least some did. And they said, well, okay, we're failing. You've been a state house member for years. What are we going to do about it? And he told them, well, sometimes you just got to move. You think, what kind of system do the voters not get to tell the legislator it's time for him to go because of the failures? Instead, we have a system where the legislators are so comfortable, they tell the voters that they need to move. That's what's happening in our state. It's happening around the country. And my book is my best attempt to tell this story in pretty, you know, sobering, realistic terms so people wake up to the problem and then start figuring out how to solve it. So I think our democracy is in great peril because of this. And I also think the outcomes. I go through a whole chapter about how this great state that we all grew up loving is struggling so badly. It's not because the people of Ohio have something wrong with them, or even that Ohio does not continue to have wonderful assets. It's because the politics are absolutely broken, and with broken politics come horrible results.
So I do I do have to say, I don't think every book gets this kind of blurb, comment. Here, let's here we are, I believe, on Twitter. Hillary Clinton. My friend David Pepper is absolutely right. While we focus on debates in D.C., gerrymandered state houses are relentlessly undermining democracy all over. We need to go on offense for democracy everywhere, every year. David's new book explains how. Are you friends with Hillary Clinton?
I mean, I have not. I've known her over the years, but she. I'm thrilled that she, you know, put that out there. But here's what I think you'll find interesting, and Jason may be particularly so. Do you know who I did a podcast with the other day? The Lincoln Project. I am getting responses beyond just, you know, well-known Democrats about this book. That and I try and in the book say this is bigger than the Democratic Party. It's about democracy. And Democrats need to stop infighting between different you know, parts of the party and start thinking big picture about protecting democracy. And if Republicans are for democracy, we need to say you're on the team too. And when I say you're for democracy, you know, Republicans only 20 years ago, you know, voted for the Voting Rights Act and almost unanimously. George Bush signed it. Ronald Reagan signed it. We need to say, you know, enough of just running around thinking about Trump, enough just dividing only among the two parties. Anyone who's for democracy needs to team up right now, because these undemocratic state houses are literally attacking democracy in every way you can think of. But let me just put it this way. If another country at one time rigged maps so they could never lose, attacked the independence of their courts, tried to regulate protests, wrote laws saying if you run over a protester, you're not liable, passed laws like the one in Texas where you tell citizens you can sue other citizens to undermine their rights, and then attack the ways that the other side votes, you know, most, you know, is most fond of voting, we would literally say, like we do with Hungary, my gosh, that country is falling away from democracy. But in our country, when a state house does it, we don't describe it that way. I mean, we literally have state houses where a majority of voters voted for one party, like in Michigan and Wisconsin in 2018. Michigan voters voted pretty solidly for Democrats for the state house in Michigan and Wisconsin in 18. What does the gerrymandering do? It keeps Republicans in majority supermajorities in those states. That's a system that Putin would love. You win no matter what happens. And what we're seeing right now in our country is how warped politics gets when you basically have people in power, the Matt Huffmans of the world, who's gerrymandering as we speak, who literally their only experience in office has been because they have not experienced democracy. And they're so extreme, just like those school board members last night, they know, the school board candidates, if they were actually in fair elections, they would lose most of those elections. So what do they do when and they're the people who write the rules of our elections. So what are they doing? They're writing the rules so they can never lose. And it's just a terrible, terrible system. And if we don't fix it quickly, I think the consequences are quite dire.
And this has been an issue that you've really led the charge on. And, you know, not to get too far down the road on it, but that is, we still don't have the new congressional maps in Ohio.
Yes.
And I think we all know.
I feel like we should get Carl Weiser on their butts because, you know, they missed their deadline. And I feel exactly. Like you need a good Carl Weiser to be like, those maps, not story, were due whatever now, a week ago, 2 weeks ago.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Sherry.
No, he should. We all should. I mean, we're watching what happens in these non-democratic institutions. The citizens voted 70-30 to change the rules to stop partisan gerrymandering, at least the most extreme forms of it. And they set clear deadlines, and they gave certain bodies of people, of elected officials, power over this process. What we're watching right now on both the state house end and the congressional end is Matt Huffman, the Senate president, and Bob Kupp, two people who never face real elections. They are in gerrymandered districts too.
Well,
they're essentially
Lima.
Appointed to their offices from Lima. They're not. They know that a World Affair districts would cost them many seats, could cost them their own seats, and they don't care that the new Ohio law says they have to do it differently. They're pretending as if nothing has changed, and they are happy to violate the Constitution in multiple ways to keep their hand on power. That's a very dangerous circumstance. And we sort of look at it and don't see it for how bad it is. If another country were doing this, if another legislature in another country were acting like these guys, we'd be saying, my God, they're totally breaking the law. They're breaking the will, the voted will of 70% of Ohioans. They do it here, and we sort of just watch it like it's not that big a deal. But I think that in the end, though, the good thing is one of my achievements amid not everything I wanted to do as party chair worked. We did win 3 of 4 Supreme Court seats. We achieved a balanced court. I think that their efforts to violate the Constitution are going to be reversed pretty dramatically by this court. But they don't care. They literally are violating knowingly, willfully, and even Frank LaRose texted that he thought their map was, quote, asinine, because he knows it's ridiculous what they're doing. But in this gerrymandered world, they just don't care. So that's scary.
David, if the shoe were on the other foot, Democrats, you wouldn't be doing the same thing?
Not me. I mean, we're the ones who champion the change in the language. Democrats and Republicans both need to follow the law as it's written in the Ohio Constitution. And what if you watch what Amelia Sykes and Vernon Sykes put forward, they put forward maps that generally were pretty close to the rules as laid out. So we've had Democrats had a chance to show what they would do, and the map they laid out still favored Republicans by a few seats, by the way, but it also generally met the criteria in that state house. And by the way, they also met all the deadlines, so Carl would be impressed. They didn't. It's missing these deadlines is not because they don't have time. It's because they're delaying it as late as possible to have as much advantage at the end to try and jam it through. So Democrats in Ohio have actually put forward maps that in good faith tried to follow the rules. They did it on the right timeline. I will acknowledge, and I don't like it, in some other states, they are trying to gerrymander. It's bad wherever it happens. Gerrymandering is just bad. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
And this is why the federal government needs to step up, because what's happening right now is a race to the bottom. You know, Ohio, Texas, Florida, North Carolina, terrible gerrymanders. So Illinois Democrats are saying, well, if they do it and we don't, then we're going to lose House seats, so we do it. And that's why a federal standard that laid out some real guardrails about what is illegal would actually stop everybody from doing it. And that's the best solution, that there's something in the national law that's actually not all that different from what's now in the Ohio Constitution that says you can't do X, Y, and Z to this extreme or it's not valid. They can do that in Congress. They should. But in Ohio, here's the thing. There's no excuse that Matt Huffman has. He can't point to Illinois, because the Ohio Constitution itself says you can't do what he's doing. And as far as I know, Matt Huffman, Bob Kupp, Frank LaRose, they all took an oath to follow the Ohio Constitution. They are violating that oath right now, and they need to follow the law. And by the way, one other thing that can happen, and I'm all about this, they are willfully violating Ohio law. They're not following the law they're supposed to follow. I believe there should be signatures gathered on Huffman in his district to get him removed from office. You know, Keith Faber literally tried to say that council members in Cincinnati should be removed for misconduct, or what was the word? I can't remember the term. But he wanted them prosecuted for not following the law when it came to those text messages.
Dereliction of duty,
where there's a law in Ohio called misconduct in office when you willfully violate Ohio law. Matt Huffman's doing that right now. He knows it. You know, they know it. And I think when this is all said and done, I don't think you just stop and say, let's fix the maps. I think you need to hold these people accountable for what is a clear, knowing violation of the current Constitution of Ohio.
I will not hold my breath.
House Bill 6. Do that kind of thing. So there's never accountability for violations of the Constitution, so they always keep doing it. And if we're going to protect democracy, wherever we are, there have to be efforts to say, you know, they tried to recall Gavin Newsom for actually trying to do a good job on COVID. my attitude here in Ohio is Matt Huffman is openly violating the Ohio Constitution. We shouldn't just let that go, you know, without any accountability. And without that much of an effort, you can hold people accountable in a way that, that frankly, if the shoe was on the other foot, like it was when Keith Faber tried to get council members here prosecuted, you know, they would do that. And I think it's something that people should do to these, to especially Kupp and Huffman. Kupp and Huffman have hijacked a process that was supposed to include LaRose and DeWine and Faber and the two Democrats. They've hijacked it. They refused to even let the districting committee meet for the last month so they could get the process back to the state house. It's all literally a thumb in the nose of the voters who voted for a new process.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't want to get down this rabbit hole, but Kupp is it's not been a good tenure as speaker so far.
No, he's been really disappointing. The guy was a former Supreme Court justice, so I actually expected more.
No, I agree.
But I'm told from in-house, and this is the problem. I'm told from in-state, you know, Republicans that he just wants a judicial appointment. That's what he cares about. So he's doing all this to get that. I mean, but they're all sort of just blatantly violating the voted will of Ohioans, and it needs to be called out as such. They're not missing the deadlines. You know, if Sherry, if you and Jason miss a deadline, my guess is because you're working really hard, you don't make it. They're purposely missing the deadlines. They want to have this come out as late as possible. That's what they did 10 years ago when Matt Huffman led the process. That's what they're doing now. They're purposely missing the deadlines. Any discovery would show that. The plan is to miss the deadlines.
Yeah.
And by the way, this should offend all parties. You know,
any party
should want to have elected officials who are not accountable.
Hey, David, you look, and you, me, Sherry, and the Fence Post over there knows this good and well that Hamilton County, when these maps are redrawn for the congressional districts, Hamilton County, they're somehow, some way going to figure out that Hamilton County is going to have two Republican-leaning districts. Yep. And we all know that Hamilton County, in a fair world and under the new constitution, would get its own district, and that would be a likely Democratic-leaning district.
Absolutely. That will be one of the biggest red flags about how bad their map is. If they try and do that, I think the map will be ruled unconstitutional. There's just no way to justify it.
Yeah.
You know, if a map ends up being 12 Republican seats and 3 Democratic seats and a split Hamilton County, that map is dead in the water. It will not get approved. Think of, you know, it'd be as if Democrats, you know, basically in the last 10 years, Republicans have averaged mid-50s statewide and Democrats mid-40s. So a fair map is around 8-7, okay, where Republicans are probably looking at maybe 8 in a good year, 9. Democrats are looking at 7 or so. So drawing a 12-3 map would be like Democrats trying to get away with an 11-4 map the other way. Like 12-3 is that out of kilter from what a fair map would look like. And 12-3 or 13-2 means they're splitting Hamilton County, and we all know that Hamilton County is about the size of a congressional district. There's no justification in any way for splitting it down the middle except for the kind of motivations that the Ohio Constitution says are illegal. And so when they try it, and I think part of what's happening is a game. These state house members, Huffman, Kupp, they'd rather have the Supreme Court be the bad guy and strike it down than they going to Steve Chabot and saying to him, hey, sorry, Steve, we can't rig elections anymore for you. You're done.
Well, that's
they'd rather have Maureen O'Connor be the bearer of bad news than themselves. And so I think it's a game of hot potato they're playing. But the sad part is they're playing a game where an essential element is they're violating the Ohio Constitution, and they're waiting for the court to be the cop where they refuse to actually give Steve Chabot the bad news.
You switching gears, and you mentioned Hamilton County there, so that gives me my segue into this next question. You're a one-time Hamilton County commissioner, one-time Cincinnati City Council member. You've run statewide. Will you, David Pepper, run again for elected office? And if so, what do you got in mind?
It's interesting question. At some point I'd be interested. I but I don't know when or how. I will say, and people say this all the time, and Jason, I think you and I have kids the same age. Like, I just dropped my kids off at school. Like, I went to my son Jack's last soccer game last week. Like, I'm really loving life.
Yeah.
I'm in a very good place. I like what I'm doing. So the question you ask yourself is, at what moment do you disrupt what is this full and really healthy, you know, overall life with your family to get into those tough races? And so it's got to be a really compelling moment where you make that decision. And I used to think when I was younger, when I heard politicians say, well, I'm not going to run because of my family. As a single guy, I thought, oh, they're just saying that. Now I'm like, that's the single best reason not to run. It actually is a reason I 100% respect and I'm saying here on, because since I've stopped being chair of the party, you know, I drop my kids off at school every day. I like was sort of the assistant baseball coach. I went to every soccer game. I loved all of it, and I still do. And so I think it's sort of, it is a question about, is there a moment where you think you entering can make a difference, a unique difference that's worth actually making things tougher on your family and on a general sort of balanced and healthy life. So we'll see. But obviously, I mean, as we said, the fact that I'm still, like, even though I'm not chair anymore and not in office, staying up till midnight till one on election night, waking up at six the next morning, cheering on all the candidates I was proud to support, looking for all the, I mean, clearly I care about this stuff.
No doubt.
And I'm also worried about, I do have deep worries about where we are as a country and as a community and as a democracy. And if I can help fight to make things better, you know, I'm still game for that.
Hypothetical for you. You know, Stephanie Dumas, the Hamilton County Commissioner, hasn't made her announcement yet whether she's going to run again or not. Let's just say, and this is nothing against her, if she runs again, you know, she's the leading, you know, incumbent there. And I don't, you know, think she would have a lot of challengers from your own party. But let's say if she decides not to run, that seems like, would that be a good spot for you to come back and, you know, run? Or do
I'm
you not
sure
want to
sure.
do
I,
any
local? I want Stephanie Dumas to run. I have become a big fan of hers. Every time I see her, I saw her at the FC Cincinnati kickoff. I saw her at a campaign event for AFTAB. I think she's a really good leader, and I really hope she runs again.
I'm
just saying that.
I'm just saying, is a countywide seat something you would entertain?
Obviously, I was proud when I won my county seat. It was back when it was a rare moment where a Democrat could do that, and so I feel comfortable running in the county because it's a place that I've won and I won when it was frankly really hard to win. You had to win a lot of crossover votes back then to win, meaning, you know, you had to do better in all parts of the community, including Republican parts, to win. So I honestly have to think about it. The other thing that I'd say is, you know, to me, if you read the book, and by the way, I really hope people read this book because it tries to expose how bad things are getting in state houses in a way that partly because the press is – now, you guys actually do a better job in Ohio than most states. But it's so hard for people to appreciate how bad things are in state houses because, you know, local press is struggling. It doesn't have the resources to cover state houses as much as people need to read about state houses. So you'll see that a big theme of my book is – positions that can protect democracy. So if I'm thinking about my own path, you know, that's obviously something I'm also very passionate about. So I'd want to think about it in those terms as well if I did it. But you know, I'd say it's a little earlier for me to be thinking about that. I'm still sort of in the wake of being having been chair. But one thing I will be confident in. One, I think I hope, and I've told her this, I hope Commissioner Dumas runs again. If she doesn't, I think, you know, just like we're seeing Bridget Kelly run for state for county auditor, I think Bridget will be great. I also think that there'll be some really good potential candidates if she weren't to run and win. Although she'd be my favorite to get reelected.
I think Bridget Kelly. Well, I'm gonna get this around, but I think Bridget Kelly is someone that can shoot for higher office. I think she's got that kind of potential, and that's nothing against the auditor seat. But I think she has a potential future mayor, potential you know, statewide types of office ahead of her. But anyway, I don't want to get down to that.
No, I agree. If I was if I were state chair and let her win her seat, but she's certainly someone I with her state house experience, where she was very respected. She's a great candidate. I think she's got great upside and a lot of potential. And it's just a great person.
Sherry,
I don't know anyone who doesn't like Bridget Kelly. Like, she's just a great person.
David, this has been fantastic. Tell folks the title of the book again, where it is available, how they can get it, find out more.
So the best thing, I don't think it's in a local bookstore yet or library. Maybe sometimes the library picks them up pretty quickly, but it's Laboratories of Autocracy. If you're in Ohio in particular, you're going to want to read it because it's really getting you into some of the hidden politics of Ohio that I think will both disappoint you, but also maybe open your eyes to, if you're a frustrated Ohioan and you don't know why the state seems to be going backwards every year, this book helps explain it. So it's called Laboratories of Autocracy. The easiest thing is to go to Amazon, and you could buy either an ebook version or the paperback. But the thing about the book that I want to tout real quick is, it's not just about how bad things have gotten in democracy in this state and others. It's also what you can do about it. It's an instruction manual on, if you're frustrated about the state of politics, if you're worried that democracy is struggling, to say the least, everyone, it's not just up to Stacey Abrams to save the day. It's everyone's responsibility. And this book gives ways that anyone who's interested can actually roll up their sleeves and get involved in different ways. And by the way, one of the things that I say is there, support local journalism. Don't get around the paywall. Share stories about politics, not just, great Paul Doherty columns about sports, but share the stories on statehouse politics you care about, because that way the reporters who cover it can cover it more. So I go through all these practical steps that people can take to try and bring more attention to the worries that we have about state houses and actually do something about it. So it's Laboratories of Autocracy, and the easiest way to get it is on Amazon.
Hey, great stuff. Tell your mom and dad we said hey, and thank you so much for joining us here today and breaking down the election and sharing about all the work that you're doing in your book as well. Thanks,
David. No better guest. Thanks, the Scott. Day after the election.
Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Thanks again, David Pepper, for joining us here today. And with that, Sherry, I think we're going to take a mulligan on the That's So Cincinnati moment. We've been so engaged in this election. And
I don't think anybody wants to hear how I worked on election stories all weekend, right? Do they?
we got more work to do here. And so we're going to go jump over and do that. Be checking out our coverage on Cincinnati.com and in the Inquirer. And thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.